This episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast is presented by Sling. Coming up this week, watch the Euro 2024 qualifiers over the next 10 days on Sling, including Malta against England on Friday, Norway against Scotland on Saturday, France against Greece on Monday, and then Iceland versus Portugal on Tuesday. All of them available through Sling. Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined by co-host Kartik Krishnayar. In today's episode, we discuss how Serie A can capitalize on a banner year to improve its TV profile in the US. So CBS Sports are coming off their best weekend ever with the Champions League final coverage, creating quite a stir across world media. At the same time, the news of Kate Abdo renewing her contract for 4 more years has been well received by soccer fans throughout the US. So it's important to note that this 2023-2024 upcoming season will be the final one under CBS's current 3-year deal with Serie A. The bidding for the domestic rights in Italy are expected to conclude later this month. And then after that, Serie A's focus will turn to the international rights deals. So we can expect to hear something probably in the next few months, probably, whether or not CBS Sports has been able to renew the rights for 24-25 season onwards. So Kartik, I've got two questions for you. How does Serie A capitalize on the success that they've had this season? And how can CBS Sports build off that to help Serie A increase the popularity of the league on U.S. television moving forward?
This is another example. I know you and I debated it with MLS. You said better quality leads to better television numbers, more viewership. Serie A, arguably best league in the world right now. At least for this past season. Clearly, Serie A was down in a period. I mean, I remember our former host of this podcast, Richard Farley, who has been a critic of Italian football, arguing with me when I was a big proponent of Serie A. And in fact, looking back at that point, he was correct. He said it's the fifth best league, even the French league's better. Looking back at that point when I had that argument with him, which was about 10 years ago or so, 9-10 years ago, I think he was right. But now, this year, there were seven, maybe eight. Let's include Fiorentina under Italiano, who was just a masterful job setting that team up this season. They got to a European final and to the Coppa Italia final. 8 really good teams in Serie A this year, in my opinion. Whereas the Premier League had, I don't know, 4 good teams. La Liga had 3 good teams. The Bundesliga had 3 good teams. In fact, I think at the end of the year, Bundesliga best team was probably Leipzig, but they started poorly under Tedesco. And then the French league had 2 or 3 good teams. So I think there were more good teams in Serie A this year, more good teams at the top. You could argue maybe if you're going 1-18 or 1-20, Spain was better, maybe Germany was better. I don't think England was better. England was pretty weak at the bottom. But they have not been able to translate this into popularity on television. And I'll tell you why, Chris. Italian stadiums are old. They look terrible on television. The supporters are there for some matches. They're not there for others. The atmospheres aren't as good as England or Germany or many of the venues in Spain, like Valencia is wonderful. Sociedad, Bilbao, Gijón, there are good venues in Spain. There are also bad ones. But Italy, by and large, has cumbersome stadiums with tracks around them, decaying infrastructure, and fewer people in the stands than they did in their heyday 25 years ago. So I think it's an issue of the ambiance, the atmosphere, the presentation not presenting well on television. And that is something we have also talked about in our conversations about Major League Soccer. And I think that's something Serie A just has a horribly tough time getting over, even though they, as you rightly said, they had teams in every European final. They had additional teams that made the semifinals and lost. And then they had, in my opinion, the best team in Europe in Napoli, who didn't even reach one of those semifinals or finals. So, I mean, we're talking about 8 good teams.
It's amazing, really, when you think about it, how much atmosphere does make a difference, right? It's one of those things that you would think that, okay, you look at the top leagues from around the world, atmosphere in the stadiums shouldn't really come into it. You would think that, I mean, most leagues are very similar. The reality is, as you've said, Kartik, it's very different, right? And I would say, too, a lot of the newer MLS stadiums, so you look at Austin, you look at Sporting Kansas City, not that new, but still, LAFC is a new one. You look at those stadiums and see how close the fans are up to the pitch, and I mean, it does create an electric atmosphere. And I agree with you. I mean, in Serie A, you've got Juventus, you've got the San Siro for both Milan teams, and there's probably a few other stadiums. But for the most part, that atmosphere, that electric atmosphere, is not quite the same. There is that distance, and you saw that too, even during some of these European finals. Even the final in Turkey, in Istanbul for the Champions League, with that athletics track around the edge of the pitch and how far the fans are from the actual field itself, it does damage the atmosphere. Doesn't pull you into those games. Now, but with Serie A, Kartik, I know that you're definitely big on Serie A from what they've accomplished, but unfortunately, I mean, they lost in the Champions League final. I mean, Inter Milan, Roma lost in the Europa League final, and then Fiorentina lost in the UEFA Europa League Conference final. I would say, though, Kartik, from watching that Champions League match, I thought Inter was the better team. Inter had more chances to win that game. There was that last minute save. I mean, there's probably like three or four clear cut chances where City were able to clear the ball off the line. I thought that Inter should have won that game, actually. What do you think?
Yeah, and I was appalled by people in the British press, and actually a lot of people in the continental press, Spanish press also, I noticed during the course of the week, just claiming this was a coronation. I wrote a piece Friday night, which was actually in reaction to everything I had seen during the week, saying, hey, you know, Inter can win this match, and here are three reasons why, which were tactical reasons, and based on what I had seen from both clubs. Obviously, I'm a City supporter, so I watched them. A lot of other City supporters say I'm hypercritical of City. Okay, maybe that factors in. I'll concede that. But I'd watched a lot of Inter, who were not the best team in Serie A this season. But Inzaghi has a way of using his entire team, right? 16 guys, or the entire eligible team that he can use, right? As many guys as he can use, and making changes in matches and coming up with kind of different tactics, even if they're in the same formation. And also, there were teams that play like Inter. The team that plays most like Inter in the Premier League is actually Brentford. And Brentford has played pretty well against Manchester City the last two seasons since they've come up into the Premier League. So I had cited that. And then people were laughing at me. And even when I tweeted before the match, hey, you know, now that I'm seeing the team sheets, yeah, I think Inter can win. People were coming back at me like, oh, you're crazy. And there were largely people who were just listening to the British press. So I thought there was a lot of disrespect of Inter coming into this match. I thought they were the better team in the match. Although, look, I will say Pep, who I criticize for being a guy that sticks with his team for too long, right? He'll be in a 0-0 match or down 1-0, and he won't make any changes to the tactics. This time, even though he didn't make a substitution, he did make a very clear change at halftime, going from what was a diamond midfield, which was working, where the three-man Inter midfield was having all kinds of space because De Bruyne and then Foden, when Foden came in, and Stones, who was on the right side of that diamond, were being pushed further wide, and there was no ability for Rodri to connect with Gundogan, right? So everybody was isolated, everybody was on an island, Inter was having a lot of joy in the midfield. He made a change. He made a tactical change, pushed John Stones further up and into midfield, like proper midfield, like a number eight, to where Stones was then able to really influence the match, connect with Bernardo, who was playing on the right, and that kind of brought City back into the game. So I do give Pep credit for that. But I do think, by and large, Inter were the better team with the better tactical plan, with the better really kind of the better sense of the occasion, really. Maybe City were too nervous. But in terms of the other two finals, I do think Sevilla, they just generally don't lose in finals. And Fiorentina were a little unlucky. I think that was a very even match. But Paqueta, at the end of that match, won it for West Ham, right? Just a moment of brilliance that only those special playmakers can pull off, right? There's a very short list of guys in the world who can pull off what Paqueta did to release Bowen. And that's just something I think Fiorentina couldn't do anything about. But your point is well taken. They did lose all three finals. And you would think law of averages, they would have won one of them.
Man of the match for the UEFA Champions League final was Edison. And that tells you a lot right there, right, in terms of how this match played out. If it wasn't for him, I mean, Inter could have easily equalized or maybe even won it late 2-1. But so Kartik, going back to a question before too, I mean, so like, what can Serie A do to capitalize on the growth and kind of improvement in how well that the teams are doing? Fiorentina, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, I know that they're looking at getting a new stadium, but then they're fighting with the city to try to get that, it's not easy, right? It's something that could take years. And even across all of Serie A, if you look at all the stadiums, they need investment, but even if that investment is there, it could take 5 years, 10 years. We've seen in Miami with the Major League Soccer stadium there, how long it takes to get these stadiums approved and built and all that stuff. So that's not going to change overnight. So what can Serie A and or CBS do to really elevate the league to the next level, do you think?
It's tough because I think one of the things that unfortunately is true in Italy, and we had this face in the United States too, right, in the 1970s and the early 1980s, when we were not building purpose-built stadiums for a specific sport. We were building multi-purpose stadiums, like the most infamous one is Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, where the Eagles and the Phillies played, and it was an embarrassment. But stadiums like Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati, Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh, we could go on and on, that were shared football, baseball stadiums, and then if there was a soccer team, they would shove the soccer team into that stadium as well. And then we got away from that and got to soccer-specific stadiums and baseball parks once again, starting with Camden Yards in 92, and then soccer-specific stadiums starting with Crewe Stadium in 99. Italy still has this thing where they build these stadiums which are athletic tracks. The municipal government gets involved. They don't want something that can't be used for multiple purposes or used for all sporting and concert purposes. This is why they have their stadium problem. Juventus was able to under Agnelli, who's now obviously been suspended from football from Italian football for a few years, able to pull off building a new ground, which I think gives Juventus long-term a competitive advantage in Italian football, in spite of everything else going on with the club and regulation and legal stuff. Honestly, Chris, I don't know, because I don't know that Serie A can get much better in terms of quality of play versus the other leagues in Europe than it was this year. Again, I think they had more good teams than any other league in Europe. And I will also say, just as a tactical geek, I know this doesn't matter to most fans, but it matters to some hardcore football fans. I saw more tactical innovation in Italy the last two seasons than I've seen in any other league. The other league that's up there is obviously England. Germany, almost everybody's playing the same way. Spain, you're seeing kind of a regression of tactics. I want to say, La Liga fans, don't get mad at me for that, but I'm seeing, you know, things that are almost like retrenching. But Italy, we've seen, we mentioned Fiorentina and Italiano, we mentioned Gasperini at Atalanta, and De Zerbi, who's now come to the Premier League, right, but was previously at Sassuolo. They have created innovative tactics for this pressing era, this high pressing era, that might, I think, in the next 3 to 5 years change the game and change the way some teams play. Brighton and Fiorentina are two teams to watch right now if you want to get a sense of where I think football's going. So that's all very interesting. Serie A has all of that going for it. But as long as they have stadiums that are like they are, as long as you have a situation where there were younger people in Italy, and Agnelli Juventus's, I guess now ex-chairman, has pointed this out. Young people in Italy don't want to go to football matches. They don't really like football. There's been violence associated with the matches, or the stadiums are dumpy, or there's just other issues as to why they don't want to go, the lack of ambiance, etc. Until that changes, I don't know how Serie A becomes a better television product. Now, how can CBS promote it better? Maybe CBS can do more. They've done a lot already, but they can do even more on the culture of Serie A, the culture of certain regions within Italy, the connection of these clubs to their communities, and not talk about Juventus and AC Milan and Inter and Roma and Lazio, but talk about some of the smaller clubs that are in the first division, that are in Serie A, and give a real accounting to the American public about the culture around those clubs. And of course, you also have Napoli, which I think everybody thinks is really cool, is a really cool club. I mean, one of the things that struck me, mentioned the English press earlier, criticized them for their build up to this match. But one thing I will praise them for is I saw more coverage of Serie A this year in England because Napoli won the title. And a lot of people in the English media loving the romanticism of Napoli coming and beating the teams from the north and understanding what that meant and understanding how improbable that was and how cool that was. And even some English journalists and English YouTubers that cover the Premier League mostly, you know, flying off to Naples to do a video or do a story because they wanted to capture that moment. So I think Napoli winning the title helps, but CBS has to build on that also and discuss the culture and explain why Napoli winning is such a big deal. Although then you get into sort of this north-south divide in Italy, but I think you need to explain it and you need to connect American soccer fans to it.
I agree, but to be honest with you, Kartika, I think CBS is already doing a lot of this stuff. So they've done a lot of the, they can always do more, right? They've done a lot of the features where they've gone out to, Aaron West went out to Naples. They did a documentary, basically kind of footage behind the scenes. They had the crew, they sent the crew out to Mike Grella and the rest of the crew out to Napoli. They've done more than ESPN has done prior, which was ESPN was the previous rights holder, and before that was BeIN Sports. And so I think they've gotten to a point where with CBS Sports, they have a major broadcaster that's invested in soccer. And I think the most important thing that they should do really is stay with CBS Sports, because those rights are coming up for bid. There's a chance that someone could come in, could be an Apple, right? Could be a ESPN might say, hey, we want it back. Or somebody else might come in and say, hey, we want those rights. We will offer more money than CBS Sports. But I think Serie A has to be really smart about this, because even if someone bids more money, doesn't mean you have to go ahead and sell the rights to that company. We saw that with NBC Sports recently in the last deal, where NBC Sports got the rights to the Premier League and renewed it for another 6 years or so, is that they didn't offer the most amount of money. You had other broadcasters, such as a combination. Actually, it was a joint deal between CBS and ESPN to try to get the Premier League rights. And ultimately, the Premier League decided to go with to renew with NBC Sports. Now, there was a lot of back and forth, but eventually they went through NBC Sports. So I think they can do more. CBS Sports can do more. Part of it, I think they face some of the same struggles that La Liga does on ESPN. You look at the amount of coverage that ESPN does for La Liga. So you've got Ian Dark, Steve McManaman, two of the biggest names in English language broadcasting for commentators and co-commentators. You've got people doing, documentaries, the bicycle series. You've got people, pitchside reporters. You've put so much investment to try to go ahead and grow that audience. And there's no guarantee it's going to pay off. And at the same time with Serie A, they've done so much, CBS Sports. Maybe they can do more. Maybe they can bring in a couple more of the heavyweights into the studio from time to time. I think they've done it in the past a little bit with Christian Vieri. But even then, there's no guarantee. So much of it really comes down to what's on the pitch. And yes, Serie A has some really good teams. Napoli, as an example, AS Roma went far, but it was ugly at times. But they know how to play, right? They know, even with Inter, they know how to play. They know how to win games. And it's tough to beat the Italian teams.
But I will say, just so for those who don't watch Serie A regularly, do not judge Serie A by Roma, okay? And this is the same thing I would say when Jose was in the Premier League and people in the continent thought, oh, that's the way English teams play, which there were a lot of snickers from people on the continent saying, oh, English clubs love to park the bus and get physical. Don't judge Serie A by Roma. It was awful. I will say I'm very pleased Sevilla won that final. I shouldn't be partisan, but it was like I didn't want Mourinho being rewarded or Roma being rewarded for that sort of cynicism and winning a trophy that way. But Inter, Fiorentina, Napoli, Atalanta, they play great, great football. And actually, even this year under Allegri, surprisingly, Juventus were a little better to watch than they've been in the past when Allegri's been the manager. They're not as fun to watch as they were the year under Pirlo or the year under Sarri, but they're still, they're still watchable. So I do think Serie A, those teams are tough to beat, but they're also much more open than people give them credit for. This is not Catenaccio anymore, except for Roma. This is a different era.
Yeah, I think what CBS Sports need is a bit of Alessandro Del Piero magic. Maybe Gab Marcotti, bring in some of these people, try to get them away from ESPN, bring them into CBS Sports and make them part of maybe a regular feature or something, just to try to grow Serie A. And again, too, the signings are key, right? I mean, Serie A, at this point in time, a lot of the kind of the players coming through the systems, so whether it's Napoli or other teams, a lot of these guys will probably end up being bought by Premier League teams too. So not that it's a feeder league, but there's definitely a whole host of talent there. It's going to be a challenge. And I think Serie A has to make the right decision. And another reason to stay with CBS Sports is because they have the magic formula. They've got games that they can broadcast on television. So whether it's CBS or CBS Sports Network, they've got a strong streaming platform with Paramount Plus, and also they've got the Golasa network now too, where they can promote games across their free ad-supported soccer channel, basically. So it has all the different pieces. Actually, the only piece it doesn't really have is the Spanish language side. And for Serie A, I don't think that's as much of an issue, but it's almost the complete package.
I forgot one other thing. They need to put some games on CBS over the air, like they've done with NWSL, like they do with Champions League, right? They're going, they're knocking it out of the park with Champions League and some of the numbers we're seeing over the air. They need to, ESPN did put a match or two on ABC when they had the Serie A rights. So they need to put a few matches on CBS over the air this next season, the third season and final season in this rights deal, and roll the dice, see what happens.
Wasn't it they put it on ABC though? ESPN put them on ABC after they lost the deal.
Yeah, right. I think that was a we'll show you to Serie A. This is what we are capable of, right? Yeah, that was what was.
But your point still stands, Kartik, is that they haven't done that. They have the ability to do it. I think in some ways, I think they're trying to grow Serie A to get it to be more popular so that by putting it on CBS, it'll do well. But then again, NWSL, right? I mean, they're growing that, trying to grow that, help grow that to make that bigger too. So, we'll have to wait and see in the next few months exactly what happens with Serie A and CBS's coverage. Hopefully it continues. So Kartik, let's move on to the listener mailbag. So next up is Wes. Wes says, I had a pause during listening to the most recent episode of the podcast about Messi to say, excellent. I've already heard several good points I've yet to hear discussed anywhere else. Especially Kartik's point that the Messi and Beckham to MLS deals are quite different from each other. I think I used to be one of those USMNT equals club people. My bad. Michael says, you are overhyping Messi's arrival more than most, actually. When Beckham arrived, it enabled many in the US to see him play on TV outside of national team tournaments. Few in the US could watch the Premier League or La Liga on TV in 2007. Every soccer fan has watched Messi play repeatedly for Barcelona and PSG. It's nothing new to see him play club soccer like it was for Beckham. It will help Inter Miami home and away ticket sales, but not much else. If people could buy Inter Miami season pass, I guess the streaming service, that can make a dent. 100,000 plus are not going to pay for the full MLS season pass, especially with Spanish coverage largely ignored. His lack of English is a huge hit in terms of promotion opportunities. No one likes listening to interpreters. If anyone receives a windfall from Messi signing, it will be Messi, not Major League Soccer. I hope Messi enjoys flying coach. So Michael, with some strong comments there. So Apple's not going to offer Inter Miami season pass only. So, and you pay less just to see the Inter Miami games and that's it. I mean, if they had thought about that in the past, it would have been before Messi signed. Now, no way, right? Now it's going to be all in. If you want to watch Messi and everything else MLS, sign up for MLS season pass. That's the only way to watch every single game featuring Messi. Some of those other comments, Kartik, do you want to chime in on any of these?
I kind of agree. You know, that's a good point I hadn't thought of. When Beckham signed, we had very little exposure to European club football. Now, I had Gold TV and I had Fox Soccer Channel, but a lot of people didn't. And I will admit, even at that point, I hadn't watched a whole lot of Beckham regularly outside of Champions League, outside of the Champions League games that were on ESPN and ESPN2. I had watched a little bit of him at Real Madrid on Gold TV. I had watched, I had watched a fair amount of Manchester United in the late 90s on Fox Sports or Fox, whatever it was called then, Sports World. But that is actually a really good point that I have to wrap my head around, because it is true, Chris. We have seen Messi in our living rooms on mainstream television, in mainstream kind of circles for 15 years now. When Beckham came to the U.S., soccer was just kind of becoming a mainstream sport. I think as badly as the World Cup in 2006 went for the U.S., that was kind of a tipping point in getting some of the mainstream journalists, even the Bill Simmonses and the Colin Cowherds and people like that, nominally interested in soccer. And then you had the Premier League and La Liga shifting to ESPN in 2009. You had Fox beginning to put games on Big Fox in 2010, Premier League matches. So, Chris, what are your thoughts on that? Because I think that's actually a good point I hadn't considered.
I guess it depends, like, what world you lived in. Because for me, it seemed, which is one of the reasons I started World Soccer Talk in the beginning, was in 2005, it would have been after the UEFA Champions League final, and it would have been before Beckham signed in MLS. But I remember the Champions League final, just watching it by myself at home on a Wednesday night and watching it on tape delay because I was working a day job, came home that night, watched it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Like, where do I go to talk about this game? Like, I've never been a big soccer fan at all over the years, the message boards. So I was like, but there must be a website out there where it has a ton of great information about schedules, where to find the games, to talk about the games themselves. And it really didn't exist. The only thing at that time was ESPN SoccerNet, or actually SoccerNet, which was owned by the Daily Mail. And then ESPN bought them out. But most of the coverage online on the internet in 2005 was mostly in the UK. Most of it was from England. So that was one of the reasons I started up. So for me, in my world, like, any game that's on television, I watched. So I was watching, like you, Kartik, I had the Fox Soccer Channel or Fox Sports World, whatever. It was Fox Soccer Channel at the time. ESPN2. I think that's where it changed, right? When ESPN went ahead, when Fox sublicensed the Premier League rights to ESPN, and then ESPN had Saturday morning games. And it was the 7:30 kickoff. and they had Ian Dark and Steve McManaman. And then sometimes they'd have another game maybe on a Monday.
But similarly, for the specific point of Messi, Chris, we saw a fair amount of Barcelona on ESPN2 and ESPNU and stuff like that in that first season too, when they sublicensed some games from Gol TV. Now, they never got El Clasico, in fairness, but there were more games than I think people remember that they just threw on at random times, but that were on mainstream channels, and you would see Messi.
Yeah, so I agree that Messi has been on television so much in the last, say, 10 years, where we've watched almost every kick, every high, every low. And that is different than what it was when Beckham first came in to the league and how much coverage we had at that time. But I think in terms of Messi, I mean, so Michael saying that it's going to help Inter Miami sell tickets home and away, but not much else. I think that's wrong. I think it's going to, yes, it's going to explode in terms of ticket sales. We've already seen that. But merchandise, you mean in terms of Messi shirts, Messi paraphernalia, and then beyond that, too, in terms of having more of U.S. media talking about the games, more fans watching the games, more people interested in coming to the league to watch the games, to see what all the fuss is about, and growing it from there. But, I mean, I think it's going to be huge. But a lot of it depends on how well MLS handles the whole situation in terms of, you know, making sure it's not a circus, making sure it is something that, you mean, making sure we know when he's going to actually start playing, and expectations wise, are we going to be able to see him play week in, week out? Or is he going to not play on artificial turfs or things like that? You mean, hopefully we'll get some clear idea of, you mean, past the hype. Is what this actually means, and how is he gonna play this year? Is he gonna play this summer? Is he gonna play in League's Cup? Right, those types of things. But yeah, no, I think it's on the TV side of it. I think everyone's going to be, even if you hate Messi, probably wanting to watch to see him lose, or if you hate Inter Miami and want to see them lose because they got Messi. And then obviously a lot of people watching the games to see if they win. And I think the other part of it too is that even in the stadiums where Messi goes to play with Inter Miami, so it's Inter Miami, say, against New England or against LAFC, is the crowd's going to be actually, you're going to have people showing up to support Messi. I mean, they're going to be cheering, even if they're from LA, and there might be LAFC fans. You'll see probably a lot of them, or maybe not LAFC, but some of the other teams cheering for Messi. So I think it's going to be huge. And it's going to, I think, from there, explode beyond that, beyond the MLS circle. And you'll start having a lot of media from overseas actually paying attention to this too. But good points about the TV, because that is something, Michael, that... I don't think Kartik or I really thought of until now in terms of that part of it, which is very, very true. Greg says, Kartik, this is to you. Good Lord. No, 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 no to Lalas. He's a yelling clown who phones it in when it comes to analysis. I do not get the love for him from Kartik. And this is in regards to last week's episode where we were talking about, does MLS 360 need to kind of bring in some of the big guns to really kind of have that big media presence, that gravitas, either in the booth or in the studio. And Kartik, I know you mentioned Lalas. Do you want to defend him for a second?
Yeah, I think he actually, I think that that's actually fairly good analysis, Greg, of much of the rest of the people who work at Fox. I'm not going to dispute that. I think Lalas actually does prepare for broadcast. He does actually bring cognizant points in between all of the kind of colorful stuff that he does, which I admit he does. I do think he actually prepares for matches. He gives more actual analysis, especially kind of when you're talking about defensive tactics and defensive structure. He knows more about that as a former central defender than the other people on the Fox set. Now, is it possible if you took Lalas and you threw him on the CBS set or the ESPN set, he wouldn't look as good? He wouldn't stand out quite as much for me as he does now? That's possible, because everybody's well prepared there. Everybody's doing their job and giving analysis at those other networks. But on Fox, I do think he's a standout. standout, because I just feel like he does prepare. He does make some good points. He is willing to say controversial things that we have other broadcasters who aren't willing to say that, right? They don't want to offend people. They don't want to provoke conversations. And then also, as I said, I think there are a lot of other people on Fox that don't do a very good job of analyzing things. So he stands out even more. And I think that's going to happen this summer at the Women's World Cup, by the way. I think I saw their roster of talent. I'm not particularly impressed by it. I think Lawless will really stand out in that studio. He'll be the guy that's saying things and making giving the sort of analytical points the others probably aren't.
See, I completely disagree on that, just based on watching him during the Men's World Cup, where he really didn't say anything. It was nothing really of substance. Basically no redeeming qualities. I would watch, a week of Fox's coverage for work to analyze it, and then watch one night of ESPN FC and get more basically information or more analysis or insight than 1 week's worth of Alexi Lalas and everyone else. The other part of it, I do respect him as an individual in terms of how smart he is, but personally, I think it's an act. So when he's on Fox, yes, he has those opinions, but the way he goes about being obnoxious in your face is an act. And I much prefer the Alexi Lalas from ESPN, where I feel that was closer to how he actually was, a real person, where he would just be himself. At Fox, it's almost like Rob Stone presses the button, and then Alexi Lalas becomes basically this puppet, this person who's just kind of raging and hearing like rah rah USA. And I know he's very patriotic, sincerely, but I think a lot of it's just over the top. He's just doing it for television, and it's not real. It does, like we asked him the question when we interviewed him, who is the real Alexi Lalas? And he said, like, well, we all kind of play a role. We all have an act, and I still disagree with that, because you and I, Kartik, this is us. If we're in the bar or in a pub right now, talking to the listeners, this is us. This is who we are. We don't put on an act. All right, next up is Francis. Francis says, Messi isn't a performing seal. He doesn't need to go on talk shows. He talks on the pitch. Similarly, Sid says, Messi also doesn't need to do morning shows or celebrity shows to get in touch with the English audience. He needs to play football. That's how he became Lionel Messi.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I completely disagree. I wish that were the case. I wish football did its talking on the pitch to the wider American audience, but it doesn't. Otherwise, they would have grasped football by this point. They would be watching the UEFA Champions League final. They'd be talking about football more in the mainstream if the great performers, which there are some in MLS, and they have all this access, obviously, to the Premier League and to Serie A, as we've been talking about Serie A on this podcast, top league. They can watch Serie A every weekend on CBS. They can watch Premier League every weekend on NBC. They have seen the great performances and the great performers, and it still hasn't caught on in the way it needs to in this country. What David Beckham was able to do was he was able to go on those talk shows. He was able to go on morning shows. He was able to talk to ordinary American audiences and engage some people in the game that had not only been engaged in the sport before, but had a predisposed negative view towards our sport. We need someone who can do that. I love Leo Messi, but maybe Cristiano would have been the better signing if you could only sign one or the other, because of the ability to go on these shows and kind of have the personality that he has and speak in English. That having been said, I know why Ronaldo could not come to the United States. I think we all kind of know that situation as to why I think he will never play here. But I do think it's an issue. That doesn't mean I don't think there'll be no benefit from the signing. Chris. I think there's huge benefits, as you've outlined and I've outlined on the previous show. I just think this is one piece that David Beckham really gave MLS and gave soccer in this country that we're going to miss out on from this. And something that, quite frankly, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, I know some people hate hearing this, but that Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney are going to give this sport and are giving this sport in this country right now. And Messi won't be able to connect with that specific audience. That doesn't mean he won't connect with hardcore football fans throughout this country, because no one, as both of you said, Francis and Sid, no one does their talking on the pitch more and better than Leo Messi. So, yes, to football fans, it'll make a difference, but to the general public, it may not.
Yeah, that's huge when you think about it, right? So on the pitch, he will do the talking. You will see him doing amazing things, scoring amazing goals, and people watching the games will be just like shell-shocked. Like, oh my gosh, they haven't seen him before, right? They would be like, this is incredible. Look at what you just did there. Off the pitch, I would argue that Beckham's influence with Major League Soccer is probably going to be greater than Messi off the pitch. So I'd have to go back into the tapes, but with Beckham, I would not have been surprised if he did the Oprah show or Ellen DeGeneres or those types of shows that got to the soccer moms, right? To try to expand the audience, to introduce him to other people or other sets of people watching games, to bring him into that, to bring them into watching games or paying attention to at least what he does. You're not going to get that with Messi on the pitch. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be wonderful. But yeah, I just wonder, actually, in terms of the potential growth, is it going to be capped? It's going to be kind of, in a way, it's going to hit a ceiling where it can't get past that. Now, the Spanish language audience side of things, I think that's quite different. And I think on the Spanish language side, he's going to be an amazing hit already, and he's going to be an even bigger hit. On the English language side, that's tough. And so it makes you wonder, right? So what is Apple TV going to do? What is MLS going to do in terms of coverage? So you have him in the games, but what are you going to do outside of that? So we know that Apple TV Plus is planning on doing a documentary series. And maybe that's what they're thinking, is maybe that documentary series that they haven't started yet, but is something that could actually tell the story better in other people's words, mostly probably, about his story, and then interview Messi and have subtitles as he tells his part of the story too. Maybe that's it. But yeah, it would have to be almost like a Welcome to Wrexham or a Ted Lasso or something like that, where it would be a series that people would watch in large numbers to really gain that audience.
Hi, guys. When it comes to Messi signing with Inter Miami, it is right up there with Pele signing with the New York Cosmos back in 1975 in terms of the impact it will have on the game here in the U.S. This signing, in my view, greatly legitimizes the reasoning why MLS and Apple, and to a smaller extent Fox, decided to partner up. I do think that in the short term, logistically, Inter Miami will likely need to move their home games to Hard Rock Stadium to accommodate the large crowds that want to see Messi. Now, if you are viewing this from ESPN's perspective, this is to a certain extent a nightmare, because they decided to pass on MLS and will miss out massively on the high ratings of games involving Messi on ABC or an increase in subscribers for ESPN+. Those ratings will now go to Fox and only compounds the serious issues ESPN is currently having when it comes to their budget. If I'm a La Liga or Bundesliga fan, I'm a little worried about what will happen to the deal my league has with ESPN because of these budget issues.
And those are great comments. Those are great input there too, because, what if Messi to MLS becomes a giant hit for Apple? Does that then make other leagues, such as La Liga, in their next deal, which is going to be several years from now, but does that make them think, okay, well, actually, maybe we chose the wrong horse. Maybe we should have gone with Apple instead of ESPN. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of watching this very, very closely to see what happens and see how that changes leagues' opinions in the future. Wild Stallion has a question for you, Kartik. He says, do you think MLS teams getting into Copa Libertadores could be a possibility now with Messi coming to the league?
Yes, I think, in fact, they'll probably try and find a way to get one or two MLS teams in, if that means buying a spot or finding a spot from another league, which had happened at one time, right? And it happened with Mexican clubs for a while. But there were we've never been in Copa Libertadores. I should clarify that. But we have had MLS clubs in Copa Sudamericana, and we had had clubs in Copa Mercator, which had been America Norte, which had been before. I'm thinking Mercator because of our frequent commenter on this podcast. Yeah, but we've had clubs compete in South American competitions. I remember very well when DC United went down and played. It was either Colo Colo or Universidad de Chile in the Copa Sudamericana. I want to say that was 2005, 2006, that time period. I remember that very, very well, that tie. So I think it'll happen. I honestly do think Messi makes it happen.
All right, just a couple of more comments to go. Next up is Ritik. And Ritik says, hey, Chris and Kartik, I enjoyed listening to the last episode. Both of you did a great job listing the benefits and even the cons of the Messi to Miami signing, which other outlets did not mention. Do you think Messi's departure from PSG and the likely departures of Neymar and Mbappe will be the final nail in the coffin for beIN Sports in the US? With the three biggest stars gone, I cannot imagine the French league will want to continue broadcasting their matches on a dying network in an emerging soccer market, despite the close ties between PSG, beIN Sports, and Ligue 1. Yeah, that's, I mean, does beIN Sports become like Gold TV? Right, Gold TV still runs, still operating a 24/7 soccer channel, the very first soccer channel ever in the United States for a 24/7 basis, still running to this day. Does beIN Sports become like Gold TV, where for the most part, it's largely forgotten?
That's a really good question, because I have been wrong on this, as you know. I have thought for a while that their time was up. That beIN, I felt like, okay, what's going to happen is that they're going to get out of the market after the World Cup in 2022, right? That I was convinced of that. If they made it to that point, and because they were going to promote Qatar, but that is not the case, right? They're still in this market. They're still promoting properties. They're still operating. So I don't know. I mean, I would say yes. I think that Liga will move on, and especially if it feels like the relationship has really made them miss their window of opportunity in the United States, which I think it has.
It's too late at this point.
But I don't know. I for some reason that network still exists, and there must be some other connection within France, within French football, and of course, why they even have the channel in the U.S. still. There has to be multiple reasons for this that we don't know on the surface.
Yeah, I think it just like Gold TV, it's relatively cheap to run that network, and they already have the rights. They've already bought the rights, paid for the rights, so they can go ahead and show those games. And I think they have the French league for until 2024. So they'll continue showing the league, and even without Neymar, even without Mbappe after he leaves, and without Messi, those games will continue. So I think but at that point then too, again, it becomes a question for Ligue 1. Do they, with the ties to beIN Sports in France and PSG's ties to beIN Sports, do they say, well, we have to stick with beIN Sports, or do they look for something else? But then something else, I mean, what else is out there? I mean, like, no other television channel in the United States is going to give Ligue 1 what they currently have, which is Ligue 1 is the flagship soccer league on beIN Sports in the United States. And even though it's hard to find those games, or even hard to find that channel, it is what it is. It is a network that shows all of the games, you mean, and shows all the big ones on TV. So no one else can provide that. All right. Two more comments. I thought it was one more, but two more. Dave says, Barcelona can no longer deny to themselves or their fans that they are broke. Messi would very likely have signed with Barcelona if they could register him and put a Champions League caliber roster around him. They cannot. Another potential loser is the opponents of the Super League. Panic among its non-Premier League founders must be dialed up to 11 as Barcelona publicly laid low their ghost of Christmas future. Desperate entities do desperate things. They're unlikely to bungle the rollout and associated PR so badly if there is a next time. And now the Super League from Europe is now down to two teams, and that's two teams that wanted to happen. It's Barcelona and Real Madrid, and Barcelona with their financial difficulties. I mean, really, it's a weak horse at this point. And then last but not least, Jeff wants to talk to us about USL. First of all, thank you for mentioning the USL on the podcast. Go Switchbacks. Always happy to see it talked about. My question is, with the start of the League's Cup and Messi to Miami, how can the USL go forward to remain competitive, not just on the field, but with fans and viewers? I know there are talks or rumors of possible promotion or relegation within USL itself. Is there space in the current market for a viable second division and beyond as the MLS continues to expand to new markets and with the introduction of Next Pro? Kartik, what do you think?
Boy, that's something that's on my mind all the time, as we talked about, as I think I've talked about regularly and write about regularly. I think what we're going to see is USL consolidate around with the MLS reserve teams having moved to MLS Next Pro. We're going to see USL consolidate around its core markets, even though Don Garber has not so coincidentally named all those markets, just ticked off those name markets when he talked about potential expansion cities for MLS. If that's not trying to engage in predatory behavior, I don't know what is. But I do know from my own reporting that there are a number of investment groups, potential expansion groups that have been talking to USL that have also been wooed or being wooed currently by Next Pro. And MLS has a goal of getting a lot of these independent clubs into Next Pro, and that therefore they can also justify giving, because it has happened these first two seasons, but giving those reserve teams competitive matches and a more competitive atmosphere if there are independent clubs in Next Pro. At least that's the soccer side justification. Now, in terms of what they're maybe really trying to do from a business standpoint, is they are trying to destabilize USL. So the question is now, does USL have enough in the tank to withstand all of this predatory behavior from MLS? I don't know, but I am really encouraged by some of what we've seen lately from USL. We're seeing more academies pop up. We're seeing more young players in the league. I do think that there has been a bit of a step back with the MLS pro teams not necessarily being in the league. So what you ended up seeing was that there were fewer youngsters in the league, and maybe there was a difference in kind of, especially at the beginning of the season, the difference in the kind of play and quality of play that we saw. But, for example, last week, Josh Winder, who is a Louisville native, gets sold by Louisville City to Benfica for over $1 million. And so this is now an opportunity. This is a very clear a demonstration of what USL can do. So if you're a local kid in Louisville, like he was, you sign for the local club in Louisville rather than going into the MLS Academy of Cincinnati or Columbus, the nearby MLS teams. And Louisville City, you will probably be fast-tracked into the first team quicker, and you will be moved to Europe quicker. And guess what? That club gets to keep the transfer fee, unlike in MLS where we know there's some sort of formula, but the league takes a good chunk of it, right? And then I think it gets reinvested into the MLS club as GAM or TAM or whatever roster designation. So this is now something I think player agents are seeing and saying, you know what, if I got a, if I have a 16 or 17 year old kid who's not going to go play college soccer, who is in an academy system, even if it's in an MLS academy system, maybe I will take him to Louisville or to Birmingham Legion or Tampa Bay Rowdies or San Antonio FC, wherever, and I will at that point be able to get my client to Europe quicker and in a way where we can get maybe a higher transfer fee very early on. And more exposure, the player will play sooner.
So Josh Winder moving from Louisville to Benfica, if that had been moving from an MLS club to Benfica, I think it would have been bigger news.
Yeah, absolutely.
There would have been more media coverage about it. There'd been more people, you know, across all of social media and across websites going crazy, just, you know, jumping for joy. Look how big of a deal this is. Benfica, I mean, one of the biggest clubs in Portugal. Well, you mean one of the big clubs in Europe, really. However, I mean, to me, it all comes down to on the USL side in terms of they really have to go for it. And I'm just not seeing those aggressive moves that they're making. They seem to be very complacent. So, for example, making a bigger deal out of Josh Winder moving to Benfica, but also in terms of communications, not just focusing on sending out tweets and think, okay, that's it, that's all we have to do, but get the word out there. I mean, there's actually a couple times this season so far where I found out after the fact that USL had some games on ESPN2, I think it was, and the day after I found out about it, I'm like, how come we didn't know about that beforehand?
And actually, in my case, you know, I knew because the team I support, Miami FC, had a game on ESPN2. So I knew about that game, but I'm in the same category. Even though I follow USL, I cover it. I'm the guy who was on Twitter screaming, why aren't more people covering the Winder story? Why aren't they covering an American youngster going to Benfica for pretty good transfer fee? I didn't know about some of the other games they had on broadcast television. I missed them.
Yeah, yeah. And we saw today, too, that the USL president or former USL president has left the league and he's gone to head up Huddersfield Town in England. So it's a club in the championship. I think from a USL's perspective, they really need to do more, be more aggressive, get the word out there, pick up the phones. I mean, actually do some outreach rather than just relying on social media and thinking that everybody's going to know because I sent out a tweet. All right, listeners, we want you to have your say. We want to get your feedback. It's really the heartbeat that drives this show. And it's also a lot of fun, too. So we also really enjoy getting your feedback and voicemails and emails and tweets and Facebook messages and YouTube comments, too. So the ways to get in touch with us, you can leave a voicemail, 561-247-4625. You can go ahead and send us an email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can go to Twitter, @worldsoccertalk, and send us a tweet. You can send us a message on Facebook, which is facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can go to our website, worldsoccertalk.com, click on podcasts, and then go ahead and leave a comment in the most recent episode. And then last but not least, you can go ahead and reach us on YouTube. Leave a comment there. All of the episodes that we do, we go ahead and produce a clip on YouTube for you to listen to. And sometimes when we have video to watch. So that's youtube.com/worldsoccertalk. Kartik, where can listeners find you on the interwebs and also Beyond the 90?
Yeah, beyondthe90.substack.com and a lot of excellent writing from my colleague Javi Martinez this past week about Real Madrid, about Sevilla, what's happening in the future with them, and why Messi was never going to sign again for Barcelona. Some great stuff from Daniel Feuerstein, including a comparative piece of CBS versus Fox. I shouldn't laugh because it reads like one of our podcast episodes, but I agree with his conclusions, by the way. Maybe some of you who are fans of Fox won't. And some of the pieces from me on Champions League final, etc. So and Jonathan Starling's weekly roundup of Florida soccer. So a lot of stuff happening at Beyond the 90. And then you can find me on Twitter at KKFLA737.
Okay, and that's beyondthe90.substack.com. All right, Kartik, heading into another week of football from around the world. We've got those UEFA Nations League semifinals Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday is Netherlands against Croatia. Thursday is Italy-Spain. And then this weekend is the final. Of course, to Thursday, we've got the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals. Panama against Canada, and then USA against Mexico. And then the final of the CONCACAF Nations League is also on Sunday. So lots of football, lots of international football from around the world. What are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.